Check. All right, we're good.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and always with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
Today we'll be covering linebackers, and we're going to do the defensive backs as well, since we think there's not really a whole lot to talk about in depth there, since that seems to be pretty set. So we're going to cover what the Bills have on the roster, what's available in free agency, and possible draft strategies for linebacker and DB. So, Nate, I know Preston Brown is probably going to be our biggest point of discussion here, the linebackers. Do you see him coming back to Buffalo?
If the price is right, probably. I think what it's going to come down to is if he's willing or if he's not willing to give a hometown discount. Because I think there's going to be a team somewhere out there that offers him something like $7 to $8 million a year. And if I were the Bills, I wouldn't pay him more than probably $6 million a year. So I would say it's 50-50 at this point in my mind.
Yeah, I think that's a decent assessment. Spotrac has Brown's calculated market value at $8.5 million. I think that's a little high given what he provides you on the field. He's an excellent tackler. You know, he's the quarterback of the defense. He calls all the shots. Outside of that, he's not really good at anything else that you'd expect at a linebacker position. Is that unfair?
I think on third down, that's definitely not unfair. Third down situations, he is more often than not a liability, especially if it's a certain passing situation on third down when he's out there, because he's not that great in pass coverage. He is pretty good at run defense. He can eat up blockers pretty well and shed them and make tackles. That's why he led the league in tackles last year. I'll be right back. My dog is going nuts. All right, I put it in the other room.
All right, so I think you were saying he absorbs and sheds blocks well right before the bark.
I'm just gonna talk about Preston Brown again. We're gonna cut this whole thing out because you said is it fair or not fair, right?
Yeah, asked if that was an unfair assessment. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just gonna start with answering that then. So I think in general that's not an unfair assessment of Preston Brown as a player. He does a lot of things really well in the run game especially, and he's able to take on blocks, shed blocks, and that's part of why he led the league in tackles last year. But he's lacking in pass defense, and he's more often than not a liability, especially with how quick and how backs are utilized in the current NFL. He doesn't really fit the mold of a guy who can be a three-down linebacker in this league.
Yeah, I mean, he's durable. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he's ever missed a game in Buffalo. But it's just, he leaves a lot to be desired in pass coverage, and that's not the type of linebacker that McDermott really likes leading his defense, like a Luke Kuechly-type player that can play every down and, you know, great against the run, great against the pass. He's the quarterback of your defense. You know, Preston Brown checks a couple of those boxes, but like you said, it has to come at the right price. I don't see Brandon being overpaying for a guy just because, you know, he's the hometown boy.
Yeah, exactly. And if you listen to Brandon Bean and McDermott speak at the Combine when they're asked about Preston Brown, they gave like the typical Brandon Bean answer where you'd say a lot of words, but you don't really say anything. And he said, yeah, they'd love to have him back, yada, yada. But it didn't sound to me, the way he was talking, that Preston Brown is at the top of their priority list this offseason. I think that's probably the way it should be.
Yeah, it's almost like they gave Tyrod Taylor a more ringing endorsement than Preston Brown. You know, there could be ulterior motives there to boost his trade value, but they certainly didn't give Preston Brown the same vocal support that they did for Tyrod, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting for sure, especially given that they benched Tyrod last year for a game and seemed like they really wanted to move on from him. And again, that could be another thing where you need to have something you're sure of at quarterback before you can do anything different. And Tyrod, you know what he is. You know he's a good NFL quarterback. And until they figure out what they're going to do, they need to show the vocal support for him. If not, maybe they really do think he's a good option for September.
Right. So going back to the linebackers, Nate, is the only sure thing in the lineup from the 2017 season to the 2018 season Matt Milano playing a weak side?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fair assessment. Milano's for sure going to be starting at weak side linebacker. He played so well, especially towards the end of last year, and he does the things well that you need to do well in this NFL. He's quick, fast. He can cover those backs and tight ends out of the backfield. He's good enough against the run. He's a good tackler, like which McDermott likes, and I think he is set to be a good player for a long time in Buffalo. Outside of that, I would be surprised if Lorenzo Alexander was not on the roster next year, given his ability to lead and his presence in the locker room and his presence just in Buffalo in general. He's another guy who kind of feels to me like Kyle Williams in the sense that he'll play in Buffalo for as long as he wants to and his body lets him.
Yeah, so I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate here. I wasn't all that impressed with Lorenzo Alexander, you know, in this 4-3 system. He got fooled a lot on play action plays. He doesn't cover well in the passing game. So he's kind of just restricted to that pass rushing role, maybe playing that strong side against the run. It seems a little pricey at $3.6 million for his cap hit in 2018 for what you're getting out of him.
That's true, and you are going to be overpaying if you're going to keep him on the roster and use him as a situational pass rusher. I just don't know if he's someone that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are going to be willing to part with if they can't go out and find someone to do his job better than he's able to do it, given all the things he brings, all the intangibles he brings to the table.
Right. And, you know, I think the only other guy that's really worth mentioning is Tanner Vallejo, the other rookie they drafted in the sixth round last year. Do we see anything from him, you know, cracking into the lineup on defense, or is he just going to be a strictly special teams guy?
If I had to say right now, I think he's probably still restricted to that special teams role, but he didn't play a lot. He wasn't healthy a lot of last season, and he didn't really get a chance even to play because he probably, if he was healthy all year, would have gotten some snaps. And you never know. Guys, he could improve a lot from year one to year two and come into training camp and surprise us. But I don't see him having a huge role on the defense next year.
Yeah, so one interesting thing I want to point out about Milano and Vallejo is they're both about the same size, about 6'1", 220 pounds. And that seems to be the common thread with the linebackers is they're getting smaller and faster. So, I mean, is there any guys in free agency that you see would be, you know, kind of fit that mold, be smaller and faster than Preston Brown to fill that void?
I think it really depends on what kind of a price range we're looking at here. Because like the top guys in free agency, the top guy probably is Nigel Bradham, who is a true three-down linebacker. And he had a great, great season for the Eagles this year. And his biggest strength is pass coverage. And That's something that's obviously super important in this league, but I think he's going to be a bit expensive for the Bills, given the other holes they have that they want to address and their limited dollars to do that.
Yeah, so the one thing I will say about Bradham is that if you're going to fork out the money for Preston Brown, why not, you know, give a couple million more for Nigel Bradham, who's, I would definitely consider an upgrade. He's more of an outside linebacker, but the way McDermott's defense plays, he could be, you know, a great addition out there just to play, you know, that nickel package on third down with Matt Milano.
Yeah, I completely agree. If I had to pick to have either Preston Brown or Nigel Bradham on the roster, I would 100% of the time pick Nigel Bradham. If you do that, you obviously have to go find someone to play middle linebacker, and that's probably going to have to be addressed in the draft because there are not a ton of middle linebackers who do the things that the Bills need them to do available in free agency. But, I agree. I would definitely rather have Nigel Bradham.
You know, as we look down through the list of free agents here at outside linebacker, there's nothing that really catches my eye as something the Bills would really go after. I mean, outside of Nigel Bradham, doesn't seem like there's a lot of guys that would be scheme fits or not be young enough that they would be worth paying so much.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys too, are more pass rushers than anything. Their strength is pass rushing, even though they play the outside linebacker position. And in the Bills' defense, they don't ask their outside linebackers to do a ton of pass rushing on obvious passing situations. Yeah, and that's like where Lorenzo Alexander could be used. But they don't want to have a guy whose main strength is pass rushing, because you see what happens when you use a guy like a Lorenzo Alexander out there who fits that mold.
Right, and as we look at the inside linebacker free agents, obviously the big name there is Navarro Bowman, but he's got the injury history, and I just can't see the Bills spending any sort of money on a 30-year-old linebacker. You know, when you could get Preston Brown, who's much more durable, you know, Bowman might be a better player when he's healthy, but it's just a risk you can't take.
Yeah, and the other guys that are free agents this year are very similar players to Preston Brown. Avery Williamson, Todd Davis, both those guys are young and just coming off the rookie contracts, but they get abused in pass coverage, just like Preston Brown does. And you don't want to replace someone. You don't want to replace Preston Brown with someone like that because he's so good at everything else. I don't think you're going to upgrade his intangibles and his run-stopping ability anywhere else.
Right, and if they do make a move on a middle linebacker in free agency that's not Preston Brown, the only guy I can see is Gerald Hodges, who actually was put on the roster during training camp, and they let him go. I thought he would have been a pretty decent, you know, depth player for them. You know, he's good in coverage, good against the run. It's kind of strange that he didn't really pick up playing time anywhere this year.
Yeah, especially because he did play a decent amount in San Francisco back in 2016, I'm pretty sure. And he played pretty well when he was there. So, yeah, there must be something there with him because, like we always say, if a team doesn't want a player, and if every team doesn't want a player, there's probably some reason for that.
Right. So I think we've pretty much covered the guys on the roster and, you know, their limited options to chase linebackers in free agency. So do you see the Bills making a move on a linebacker somewhere in the early part of the draft?
I would say probably not. excuse me. I would say probably not. I think there are other positions that are more important for them, especially if they're going to try and move up in the draft. If they stay at 21 and 22, I could see it. Maybe. The best linebacker is probably not going to last to their slot at 21 and 22, and they're not going to move up for a linebacker. I would think it's a position they're more likely to address in rounds two or three.
Right, and I think a lot of it depends on the draft board they have. You know, Roquan Smith, I consider to be, you know, probably the best defensive player in the draft, and I just can't see him making it all the way to 21. But if he does and the Bills don't trade up, I think you have to take Roquan Smith.
Yeah, if he is there at 21, and they have both those picks still. Absolutely. I think you can go with him, and then maybe if there's a quarterback left on the board. But if he falls that far for whatever reason, yeah, I agree. You have to take him. He is a immediate upgrade to the center of your defense and has the potential to fill that Luke Kuechly-type role going forward.
Yeah, he's also a smaller guy. He's 6'1", 225, so he kind of fits that mold of what, you know, McDermott wants and what pretty much most of the NFL wants your three-down linebacker to be these days. Another guy that I really like, if he's on the board at 21 or 22, or maybe trading back up into the back end of the first or front end of the second, is Rashawn Evans from Alabama.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big fan of his, actually. If you watch the national title game, he absolutely dominated that game. And when he's on, he is a truly dominant player. He doesn't have the same ceiling as Roquan Smith, probably, but he is the typical Alabama front seven player. Big, physical, beats you to the ball every single time, and just wins.
Yeah, and another guy I know I've kind of had my eye on is, I believe it's Josie Jewell from Iowa.
Yeah, so he, this past year, he did have some injury problems. He missed some time, and that's something that we always need to consider given the availability that McDermott and Bean always hype on. But he has another guy who, he's bigger, and he can eat up some blocks, which is something that is important, especially if the Bills are going to have smaller outside linebackers. And that's something with a guy like Roquan Smith, you got to have a bigger linebacker that can eat blocks for him so he can be free to make plays. Josie Jewell is a guy that can go eat the blocks and let some of the other outside linebackers, the safeties, come up and make plays.
Right, and I think a lot of people are projecting him in the middle rounds, so that's somewhere they can really find value if they decide to not address linebacker in the first couple rounds. I think that's a good player they can target in the middle rounds. Is there anything else you want to add for linebackers? Is that pretty much wrap up what we think?
So one guy I do want to talk about a little bit is Shaq Griffin. I think he's just an unbelievable story. And if you got to watch him play at all last year, especially against Auburn in that bowl game, he just dominated that bowl game. And, I mean, the guy has one hand. He just ran like a 4.440 at the combine. And given that he has one hand, he's probably not going to – if he had two hands, he'd be a first-round pick. But I think he's a guy who screams process to me.
Yeah, I'm actually slightly embarrassed that I forgot to mention Shaq Griffin. I'm a big Dan Le Batard Show fan, so he went to Central Florida, and, you know, he came on for a few interviews, and I just really liked his attitude. And, you know, he's kind of got the prove-it-to-the-world attitude. But watching him, I think I watched the title game against Memphis for their conference championship, and he's just a dominant player out there. You know, you can say all you want about the competition, but Memphis is a pretty good offense, and so was Auburn. And like you said, he stands out. He's a really good player.
Yeah, against Auburn, he was all over the field. I think he had three sacks, he forced a fumble, and he had an interception. And for a guy with one hand to get an interception, that is pretty impressive to me. And it was just an unbelievable play he made to come down with that football. And he is a guy who I think is going to be a playmaker at the next level. And it's not like you can't succeed with just one hand. I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul, granted he still has fingers, but he basically plays with a club on his hand. And he still has been an effective player doing it. And Shaq Griffin's been doing his whole life. And I think he's going to find a spot somewhere in the NFL and be an effective player.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nate. I think he's a great player. I think he can be effective. I mean, his game tape more than proves that. Crushed the combine workouts. So where are you okay with the Bills drafting him?
I would be okay with them drafting him in the second round. I think he's worth a second round pick. I think his talent, he screams talent when you watch him. And the only thing that I think teams should be at all hesitant about with him is the fact that he only has one hand. But like I said, I think he's just a guy that screams process and fit so well in Buffalo and in this system and with this coaching staff. And he's the one guy I really hope the Bills draft this year.
Yeah, he's been on my radar. I can't believe I left him out from our discussion. But I agree. I think second round is definitely a reasonable place to take him. I know Pete Carroll and the Seahawks are going to have their eyes on him, so he could potentially even go like in the middle of that second round. So they might even need to trade up ahead of the Seahawks in round two to go get him.
Yeah, especially the Seahawks on our team that you would think would like him as a player, especially that his brother plays for them. He's played with his brother his whole life. They went to Central Florida specifically because Shaq was the only offered a scholarship by Central Florida. And to get them back together, I think the Seahawks would be willing to entertain that again if it's at the right price. I think second to third round is probably where he's going to go. Some teams obviously probably won't even have him on their board, but the teams that like him, I think, are going to be willing to spend that second round pick on him.
Yeah, it's just insane that some analysts are saying he's a special teams player. Just watch the tape. The guy is really, really good. And you know, he's got interceptions in college football, so I think that should kind of lay to rest the concerns about the one hand.
Yeah, I mean, and even if there are a couple of times in the NFL where he goes to make a play where most guys would have intercepted it maybe and he's not able to, it's still not something that you take a player off your board because he has one hand. I just think that's absolutely ridiculous, and I really hope he is able to prove anyone that doubts him wrong in the league.
Right. I mean, you don't pay linebackers to catch the ball. So, I mean, I think that should be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see so many linebackers every year drop easy interceptions, and you kind of laugh at them. But, yeah, you're right. They're not wide receivers. That's not what they're getting paid for.
All right, so that kind of wraps up our discussion of linebackers. Let's move on to DBs. Probably not a lot to talk about here since, you know, the lineup's pretty set. Tre'Davious White is an elite corner in the NFL. He's your number one guy. You have, you know, a good young safety tandem that are locked up for a few years in Poyer and Micah Hyde. And then what do you think of the Vontae Davis signing?
I like it. I think it's a good signing at a good price, and he's a very good zone corner, and especially given his age, it helps him to play more zone. Like, he's going to be able to play in Buffalo. And he signed one of those one-year prove-it deals too, so he's out there to go have a really good year and try and get one more long-term deal to end his career. I think it's a really good signing, and I think he'll be a good fit in Buffalo. Now, that's not to say I still wouldn't like to see EJ Gaines back. Like, imagine having, because the Bills' base package is nickel for the most part. So imagine having that secondary of Tre'Davious White, Vontae Davis, EJ Gaines, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde. That would be one of the top secondaries in the league to start the season.
Yeah, that's kind of funny how a lot of analysts had that secondary is the worst, the 32nd ranked secondary before the season started. So it just goes to show you what a good job McDermott and Bean did in assembling that.
Yeah, for sure. They definitely outperformed expectations, especially the safeties. Both of those safeties had really, really good years and are really good players, and they play off each other really, really well. Jordan Poyer loves coming down in the box, making plays, getting into the backfield. And Micah Hyde's great at sitting over the top and sitting in those zones, reading coverage, getting those interceptions. And they do so many things so well, and I was definitely super impressed by them all season long.
Yeah, so the one thing, you know, you mentioned Vontae Davis really excels in zone coverage. He's a good tackler. Same things can be said about EJ Gaines, but he never really stood out when he was with the Rams. So is it fair to say that maybe EJ Gaines' value, you know, has been boosted by playing with three really exceptional guys in the secondary?
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. When you have other guys out there that are able to do their job so well, it makes your job easier. You don't have to worry about what other guys are doing, or if you happen to make a mistake, there's someone, the safety's going to be there, or one of the corners going to be there to pick you up. And that being said, though, the Bills won when EJ Gaines played this year. I can't remember the exact. I think they were 8-3 when he played, and I think there's something to that stat. I don't think it's just some kind of luck. When he was there, they won. Now, that maybe that is just that their other corners were such a drop-off, and Vontae Davis will kind of have the same effect this year. But I'm not 100% sure of that.
Yeah, that's the first thing that came to mind when you started saying that, is just the drop-off from E.J. Gaines to Sharice Wright is just enormous. You know, I don't really think Sharice Wright is a guy you ever want to put on the field as your second corner in the NFL.
Yeah, that I completely agree with that. And you can definitely hide Sharice Wright, not hide him, but he's better in the nickel. And that's why when Vontae Davis, or excuse me, E.J. Gaines was healthy and he was able to play nickel, he played a lot better. I still think it would be worth Buffalo getting another corner to either play that nickel slot or play outside and have Vontae Davis play in the nickel. He was, listening to him speak after he signed the contract, he was very open to playing anywhere on the field they asked him to do, whether it be outside or in the slot. So I think adding another corner somewhere is still something the Bills should at least consider doing.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nate. I think that was one of their areas where they really, really lacked any sort of depth. You know, we saw that as soon as E.J. Gaines went down, it was an immediate drop-off. So they're definitely going to address this position in free agency or the draft, you know, to have some backup behind White and Davis. I don't see them spending the money on Gaines or any of the other top corners like Tremaine Johnson or Malcolm Butler. It just seems unlikely that the Bills will shell out that kind of money for another corner when they already have an elite one and a pretty good one in Davis.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there are a lot of good options in the draft for them beyond the first round. One, the guy that I would really love to see them draft is Dante Jackson. And that's for a couple of reasons. Number one, he played with Tre'Davious White at LSU. Tre'Davious is probably trying to sell him to Bills staff. I know he's been trying to sell him on Twitter, tweeting about wanting the Bills to draft him. And he had a great year at LSU. He's a little bit undersized, but he could come in and probably play in that slot. He's super fast. He's athletic enough to run the route with the receiver, and he's someone that another LSU guy, given that the success of LSU backs, defensive backs in the league, I would really like the Bills to go get him.
Yeah, I think if the board falls together, you know, how they want it to, that's definitely a possibility. I do want to go back to the free agents really quickly for the cornerback spots. Ross Cockrell, Mikel Roby Coleman, and Aaron Colvin are all free agents, and obviously the first two have ties to Buffalo. They've spent time there. Do you see the Bills bringing either of those guys back to play nickel for them maybe, or be a backup on the outside?
I think Roby Coleman is an interesting possibility. I mean, he's still only 26 years old. He had a couple really good years as a slot corner in Buffalo, and he had another really good year in Los Angeles, excuse me, this year as a slot corner. And if they're looking to go get a slot corner, I think he's a guy that is definitely worth whatever price. He's not going to be expensive. And it's just, does McDermott want him back and want him in Buffalo? Because he never played for McDermott, so maybe he's not the type of player they're looking for. But he's a guy that I think I'd be interested in seeing the Bills bring back.
Yeah, and one thing I want to point out is Aaron Colvin for the Jaguars was probably the best slot corner in the league, and it kind of went unnoticed because of how good the two guys on the outside are. Do you think he's really going to get paid a ton of money? I mean, he's only going to be 26, but that's definitely an option if they're willing to spend a little bit.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things to think about with him is he fell pretty far in the draft because he had that torn ACL. And he played slot corner for the Jaguars very effectively since they drafted him. But like you said, the Jaguars had two of the best corners in the league on the outside. Do you think a team might see Colvin as a guy who can play on the outside?
That's actually an interesting question. If the Bills were to sign him, I'd definitely want to see him, you know, probably in the slot. If the Bills were to sign a guy they wanted to play outside and move Davis to the slot, I would say probably Ross Cockrell, who used to be on the Bills before they cut him, and he ended up being a solid starter for the Steelers on the outside. I believe he played for the Giants this year as well.
Yeah, it actually is weird to me that they traded him for like a 7th round pick to the Giants, and it just was a weird thing to me. I thought he was a better player than that, but yeah, that's another guy who probably could fit in Buffalo. Again, if the price is right, I given the limited amount of money they have to work with, I would be very surprised if they shelled out a ton for anyone. But that's another thing we'll have to kind of wait and see what they're going to do, especially if they're going to pay Tyrod and keep Tyrod on the roster. They really don't have a ton of flexibility cap-wise.
Right, and the one thing we don't want to forget here is that Leonard Johnson is a free agent, but I think it's highly likely that he comes back on pretty close to a veteran minimum deal to be their slot corner. He played pretty well this year. I mean, he's a great tackler. He's not great in coverage, but you know, he's kind of a McDermott guy.
Yeah, and I don't see other teams having a ton of interest in him, and I think if the prices are similar, he's more likely than not to end up back in Buffalo next year.
What's surprising is he's only 28 years old. For some reason, I thought he had been around much longer than that. So that makes sense to, you know, bring him back and play the slot, keep Vontae Davis outside, you know, and probably draft a guy at some point. So are there any other prospects in the draft you see at corner?
My favorite guy in the draft is Joshua Jackson, but I think he's going to go before 21 or 22. And the other thing is, I just don't see the Bills. I just don't see the Bills spending a first-round pick on a corner. There are so many other holes they need to fill. I think that second round is probably the very earliest they'll pick a corner, and maybe even further down the draft than that. And down further in the draft, my favorite player down further is another LSU guy, and that is Kevin Tolliver, who was actually supposed to be the best corner at LSU this year and kind of struggled in 2017. There are a lot of people that really like him and a lot of other people that think he's going to be a bust and wouldn't draft him. But I just like the LSU guys.
Yeah, I think looking down through the draft prospects at corner, there is a ton of depth here. So with the Bills investing that first-round pick in Trey White last year, like you said, there's so many other holes on the roster. There's no need to go after Josh Jackson or Denzel Ward when you can get one of the LSU guys, maybe Mike Hughes or anyone else, J.C. Jackson in the second round. Or maybe even third round for some of them, because we don't know how much the quarterbacks are really going to shake up this draft. So there could be some scenarios where the Bills get some really good players to fall to them towards the back end of that second round.
Yeah, for sure. That's going to be one of the most interesting things to see play out is where the quarterbacks go in the draft and where the quarterbacks go in free agency. And that's going to – where those six guys end up getting drafted and if there's a run on quarterbacks is going to really determine the rest of the draft for Buffalo. I hope they can keep at least one of those first-round picks and most of their later-round picks and get more players rather than go up and not be able to do that just because – how successful Brandon Bean was last year in the draft. I think the more picks, and he always talks about wanting to have more draft picks. So I think and I hope that they will go after one or at least one, maybe even two secondary guys towards the bottom end of the draft.
Yeah, so I think that pretty much wraps up corners. We know who the starters are at safety, but we also know it's a problem there with not having depth behind those two guys. You know, the Bills signed some players to some future contracts. I don't think any of them are really worth mentioning. You know, nobody really stands out as a guy like, oh, hey, I'd want him, you know, to be in the lineup if one of our starters goes down. So do you see the Bills getting, you know, a depth guy in free agency?
I wouldn't necessarily be surprised, but it's probably not going to happen early on in free agency if it happens at all. I think they're obviously really happy with the guys they have at safety, and those guys were very durable this year. And I think it's more about trying to find the right fit as someone who, if they need to play a game or two next year, fits what they want to do system-wise and fits in the locker room. more so than going out and trying to find anyone with a ton, the best talent they can find in the market.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't think they're going to go out and sign anyone safety-wise in free agency.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they do, it's going to be after that period where it counts against the compensatory pick formula. You know, from the moves they've made so far, it's pretty evident that Bean's pursuing that route. If they let EJ Gaines walk as we expect them to, you know, they're going to get probably a third-round pick in compensation for that because he's going to sign a mega deal somewhere. So, yeah, if they sign someone at safety, I think it's going to be someone insignificant, probably haven't heard much of. It'll be, you know, later, probably after the draft.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Once you go through the draft, then you know for sure if there are any holes you are trying to fill based on what you do or don't do in the draft. So that's probably when they're going to go out and sign any more depth guys in the secondary.
As we look at draft prospects, you know, for safeties, there's obviously the top-end talent with Minkah Fitzpatrick, Derwin James, Ronnie Harrison. Those are all guys that are going to go in the first round or two. There's not quite the same level of depth as there is for corners, but I could see them adding, you know, a safety maybe like in round five or somewhere near the back.
Yeah, absolutely. It never hurts to draft guys and try to develop them and have that depth on your roster. That's all the great teams have. When someone goes out injured, there's someone behind them that can step in and fill in. And I think there's no better way to do that than through the draft. So I think drafting two secondary players this year would be a good move, whether it's two corners, it's a corner and a safety, however it shakes out. But having that secondary depth would be huge, because that was one thing that the Bills secondary struggled with last year. Given that when EJ Gaines was out, it was a whole totally different defense. And I assume that if Poyer or Hyde missed an extended time, it would have been the exact same thing.
Right. And I will point out Jordan Poyer was a 7th-round pick, I believe. So he kind of went unnoticed, and the Bills uncovered a diamond in the rough there. And Shaq Griffin, the linebacker from Central Florida, I know a lot of teams project him to kind of be a hybrid-type player in the NFL, so he could even be that kind of Jabril Peppers-type role, where he can play linebacker, safety, special teams.
Yeah, especially because he's a smaller guy, and we saw how fast he is, and he has the ability to cover tight ends successfully at the next level, and being able to utilize him in a variety of different roles is something that I would be interested to see Leslie Frazier and McDermott do, because they didn't really have a player last year that they could move around the field all over, and he could wreak havoc anywhere. There wasn't really a guy on the roster that could do any of that.
Right. Micah Hyde, I think, can do that. It's just they aren't able to because they need him to play safety. So I think, you know, we were on the Shaq Griffin hype train before anybody really knew who he was. It wasn't documented in the podcast because we hadn't started it by then. But, you know, we're not just jumping on the bandwagon here after his combine workouts. I think he's going to be a really good player. And you know, like we said, they can kind of kill two birds with one stone if they draft him in the second round to be both a linebacker, a safety, and a pass rusher.
Yeah, I'll be very curious to see over the next week or so, after the combine's over and scouts have gotten their look at all the players, where he ends up, his stock ends up falling. Because before the combine, he barely even got invited to the combine. It was a late invite after some social media pushback that he wasn't invited. So I'll be curious to see where he gets slotted, because, I mean, before the combine, he was probably looked at as a late-round pick, mid- to late-round pick, but I think he improved his stock significantly this past weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think the combine matters a whole lot, not as much as people think it does. I think a lot of the truth is in the game tape, and I think that stands out more so than his combine workouts.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm more speaking to the fact that scouts all through the year, they do get to watch a ton of tape. They do all this work. They have their list of players they like. And there are coaches who go to the combine and see these guys for the first time and kind of fall in love with them and maybe overrule what the scouts say. And all it takes is one coach fall in love with the player to overrule the scouts. And I do think that something that could potentially happen with Josh Allen, coach goes in, sees his size, all the physical tools he brings to the table, and even though the scouts are saying, oh, he is not that accurate, he's misses reads a lot, he doesn't do all the things that an NFL quarterback needs to do, they see the size and like, oh, I want that guy. And I think all it takes is one coach.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, I think that kind of wraps up, you know, we've covered all the positions for the Bills. And, you know, we're getting about a week and a half away from the league year starting. So I think that wraps up our discussion of linebackers and DBs and all the other Bills positions. So the next time you'll hear from Nate and I, we're going to discuss, we might do a little free agency teaser for you. Maybe the beginning of next week we'll get that out so you can listen to that before free agency starts. You know, after that we'll wait a few days for the madness to ensue and then let us collect our thoughts and we'll give those to you on what the Bills decide to do with signings and trades. All right, you want to go into
We can cut that. Sorry, I lost you at the end there.
That's I stopped talking, so that's fine. So okay. We can just splice that together. Since I talked a lot there, do you want to do the beginning of the conclusion?
Yeah.
So we can just swap out my name and your name.
Yeah. And that brings us to an end of episode 6 of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Nate Schreiber.
And I am Alex Pollinger. Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts so others can give it a listen.
Check us out on Twitter @Bills_Breakdown, Facebook @BillsBreakdown. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
All right. Solid.